Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas. This is Premier Christian Radio. Tonight, I want to talk about a very basic, fundamental need that we all have. Sadly, in a rushing, hurrying world where people don't only dash around but seem so preoccupied with their phones, this need is often not met. I'm talking about the fundamental need to be seen, to be noticed. We all have a deep need to be seen. The first time we ride a bike without falling off, or successfully use a potty, not at the same time as riding that bike, when we score a goal or we win that race, the need to be noticed is primal in us all. So much so that the hunger to be seen can actually create dysfunction and even sin. Jesus rebuked the Pharisaic barons who adopted a pray and display spirituality and exposed their desperate appetite to not only be seen but celebrated. He said, "And when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others." And later, in that withering sermon in Matthew 23, Jesus said of them, "Everything they do is done for people to see." Yes, the need to be seen can bring corruption. But we all need to be noticed. Jesus saw people. A weeping widow from Nain passes by, and we read that Jesus saw her and his heart went out to her. And he saw people when they were at their worst, in the midst of hot denials with curses. Peter suddenly felt eyes upon him. Luke tells us the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. This was no passing glance, but a look of total knowing and yet love and commitment. So tonight, let's talk about being seen and noticing others, because when we feel seen, we feel valued, and that might just be life-altering. It's currently my favorite worship song, "Holy is the Lord," Chris Tomlin. We're talking about being seen. It was a case of mistaken identity, and it happened when a man who fixes block drains came to our house. Our plumbing was terminally congested, and my combined efforts with prayer and a plunger were to no avail. This comes as no surprise because my DIY gifts are extremely limited. Whenever I've attempted household repairs, our family has always moved into a time of intercessory screaming, so I called a drain clearance company. Ron, otherwise known as Ron the Drain Man, arrived with his Ron the Drain Man van. I met him on our driveway and shared the unpleasant details of our problem. He assured me that he would lift a manhole in our front garden and resolve the issue in a jiffy. I thanked him, returned to the house, and jumped into the shower. 2 minutes later, Ron decided that he needed a little more detail about the plumbing layout of our home, and so he rang the doorbell. My wife, Kay, answered the door. Now, Kay is just 4 years my junior, but looks considerably younger owing to her youthful genes and me obviously having had a rough life. Ron took one look at Kay and uttered words that brought unbridled joy to her heart. "Can you please tell your dad that I need a word?" Kay is unendingly kind, and she decided not to correct Ron's mistake and risk embarrassing him, so she called up the stairs to me. "Dad, can you come down and talk to Ron?" First glances can be deceiving. I know this from bitter experience, having planted my foot squarely in my mouth because I rushed to conclusions. Like the time when I spotted Sue arriving for Sunday morning church. She was pregnant, or so I thought. In the final few weeks of her confinement, she'd become quite gigantic. She was certainly ready to bring her huge offspring into the world. "Good morning, Sue," I smiled, and noticing her undiminished girth, I asked, "So, no baby yet then?" She smiled warmly, another example of beautiful kindness, and nodded at the pram that I'd apparently failed to notice. "I had the baby last Tuesday, Jeff," she said, pointing to the bundle in the pram. "It's just that I'm still this big," I was about to say, but I thought better of it, my brain having finally caught up with my mouth. I'm so sorry, Sue. What a beautiful boy, I stammered, praying that the pink-faced infant was indeed a male of the species. I had staggered into this gaffe because of first-glance presumption. Ron, the drain man, and I share the same malady. You see, we took a quick look and too quickly opened our mouths. But there's a more subtle yet terribly toxic temptation that surely awaits us all. We take a first glance and, in an instant, we close our minds, or worse still, we close our hearts. Some scientists say that we humans start to form impressions of others after seeing their face for less than 1/10 of a second. If they're right, that means that we decide at lightning speed if someone we meet is attractive, authentic, competent, or worthy of our time. Spotting that aggressive-looking soul who has chosen to tattoo his body with profanities, we declare him a thug and dangerous with it. And what of that picky, irritating soul who asks endless questions at the church business meeting? He's surely trouble, a threat to our unity, or so the minister nervously thinks. Noticing. Going beyond the first glance. That's what Jesus always does. Let's be like him. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. We're talking about seeing people. His name is also Jeff. He's a farmer, and he's part of our church family here in Colorado. He is absolutely hilarious. Most Sunday mornings, we share a laugh or two after the service is over. But I was quite unprepared for his warm, sincere offer of hospitality. We're pregnancy checking the cows this week, he smiled. Why don't you come over, Jeff, and lend us a hand? For the uninitiated in these matters, let me say that I quickly learned that he needed my arm, not just my hand. Without being too indelicate, farmers can either use blood tests to check if their cows are pregnant or simply insert their arms into the hapless cow's rear end and find out manually if Daisy is in the family way. In all my years of Christian ministry, I've never received such an invitation, which I politely declined. Knowing the way my life usually turns out, Daisy would be irritated by such an invasive greeting and would dash around the field with me attached and screaming for help. No, thank you very much. Just last weekend, Farmer Jeff offered another easy-to-resist invitation. We're castrating the bulls now, he said, as I quietly controlled the urge to weep. Do you want to come over and help us out? I mumbled that I had a busy week. But then, in an instant, everything took a totally different tone. Jeff's laugh-out-loud face now looked very serious. Actually, we farmers could really do with some prayer support right now, he whispered, his eyes sad. We're in a major drought here. A third of my wheat crop has died already. We desperately need some rain. I promised to pray, and I did. And after he had gone, I considered my own attitude to rain. I love the rolling green hills that we enjoy in the UK, but I've never been thrilled about the clouds that freely irrigate them. I like it when my windscreen wipers are on sabbatical. So much do I love sunshine, sometimes I've wrestled with what I hope might be a ministry calling to serve in beach missions in Hawaii. My brief conversation with my farmer friend gave me a whole new perspective about rain. The French novelist Anne Nin wrote tellingly, "We do not see things as they are, but as we are. Depression can distort our view on things, as can fear. And sadly, prejudice of all kinds blurs our focus. When we form an opinion of a person or a people group, our eyes are wide open to that which confirms our opinion, but often blind to what contradicts it. You always can be a lethal turn of phrase in a marriage. Once we've made our minds up about someone, we can quickly close our eyes. We can quickly close our hearts up to them as well. We need to intentionally see people. So when we disagree, let's go out of our way to listen hard before speaking much. Let's carefully consider a different point of view and be open to the unpalatable but very real possibility that we may be wrong and that we need to see that." Later that Sunday, a quarter of an inch of rain fell, a welcome response to the prayers of many, and we had quite a good soaking just this morning. Looking out at the puddles through windows beaded with water, I welcomed it as a blessing. My view of rain changed forever, and my perspective about Farmer Jeff has changed as well. Now, he's not just the vivacious, cheerful chappie who always brings a smile, but I now see a man whose challenges and burdens I understand just a little more. Let's pray that God will give us eyes to see with his perspective on life, on others, on ourselves. And while we're at it, please spare a thought for Daisy the pregnant cow and Johnny the frisky ball, because I think they're both feeling just a little nervous. We're talking about seeing others. It happened during an evening spent in the home of a family from our church. Craig and Andrea are missionaries serving on the campus of Colorado State University. Their commitment is impressive. Their tiny home, often crammed full of students. Their daughter Zoe is a little lady with a big smile, and once we'd finished our meal, little Zoe announced her plan. "Let's play hide and seek," she whispered, and then proceeded to take us on a tour of the room, pointing out the most likely places where she would hide. Perhaps she didn't feel confident that we would be able to locate her without some help. Unsurprisingly, with her hints, it didn't take long for the game to be over. Time for another suggestion from Zoe. "You know, I can jump really high," she ventured. I realized that this was not a moment to just congratulate her on her vertical takeoff skills or encourage her that should she embrace a challenging regime of exercise and athletic discipline, perchance there might be a gold medal in her future. She didn't need to hear any of that. She just wanted me to utter three words. "Show me, Zoe." And so, show me she did. Bounding up onto the couch, she made me feel a little nervous. You know, we had the minister and his wife over for dinner, and the kids ended up in hospital with broken bones. She leapt into the air, landing safely, which was the answer to a hasty prayer. We clapped and cheered. You see, Zoe wanted to be seen. And we'd obliged. As I mentioned earlier, we all have a healthy need to be seen, and noticing is one of the wondrous attributes of God. As the Old Testament story of Hagar reveals, she was a trafficked slave who had been hauled out of her Egyptian homeland and taken across borders to Canaan. She was commodified, used, and abused by Abraham and Sarah. A bewildered fugitive in the Sinai desert, she bumped into an angel, heard her name spoken, and gave God a name too. The word she uses means, "You are the God who sees me." Hagar discovered this life-altering truth, one that's affirmed through Scripture. When God sees, and he sees us, he cares. And then there's Zacchaeus, that tiny chap who always makes me think of a tree-bound Danny DeVito, a man despised by everyone, tagged as a shark, a quisling, a traitor. That tax gatherer had felt the icy freeze of too many cold, hard stares. And then Jesus came by, looked up into the branches, saw Zacchaeus, spoke his name. Being seen birthed a brand new life. So today, let's see, let's notice what's around and who is around us. As Annie Dillard puts it, we are here to witness the creation and abet it. We are here to notice each thing so that each thing gets noticed. Together we notice not only each mountain shadow and each stone on the beach, but especially we notice the beautiful faces and complex natures of each other. Otherwise, creation would be playing to an empty house. Today, let's notice. This week, let's see. Lives might change as we see. The show that's playing all around us is pretty spectacular. Whatever we do, let's not miss it. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.